Failure to hold on to the truth means fear of letting go of the error. Unwillingness to give up sin implies fear of not getting something satisfactory in place of it. Unquote. And in the final edition, she writes, "False and self-assertive theories have given sinners the notion that they can create what God cannot, namely, sinful mortals." Mrs. Eddy's deep meaning of animal magnetism. When Mrs. Eddy was pressed concerning what she meant by the term animal magnetism, her generic term for error, she said it was sin, indicating the same meaning of sin she had given Laura Sargent. Speaking of the Pandora box from which all ills have gone forth, especially despair, Mrs. Eddy writes, "Matter, which takes divine power into its own hands and claims to be a creator, is a fiction, in which paganism and lust are so sanctioned by society that mankind has caught their moral contagion. It is mortal birth that pulls the wool over our eyes, causing the deep sleep which fell upon Adam, in which cause and effect are mere illusions. It is the false belief in mortal birth that seems to rob us of our true identity as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, until through science we awaken out of false beliefs and illusions." Mrs. Eddy taught those in her home, "Every sexual emotion is a conspiracy against science." And the treatment, "Love is all," will make the person treated mentally strong and confident and without fear. "Love is all" will destroy lust or sex desires, as sex is a lack of mental confidence. God, the mind of man, is the only creator and does all the creating that is done. It is general mortal thought that first said man came from the dust of the ground, Adam, then from a rib, Eve, and now from a circumscribed and non-intelligent egg. Unquote. But science has come to teach us the present isness of life. Man is, not shall be, perfect and eternal. And the time is at hand to accept the spiritual origin of man, which ushered Jesus into human presence. Unquote. We can accept the truth about ourselves now. Note her teaching. Quote, "A lie is never true. This departure from truth came with the words sex, sexuality, sensuousness, matter. And these are the objective state of what is called mind, separated from God, the one mind." The solution is to see that man was never separated, never did fall away from oneness with God. However, one born of the flesh cannot avoid the struggle that ensues in the laying down of the mortal concept. Mother explained the difference between material sense of love and a spiritual sense. A material sense of love dishonors the one it professes to love through lust, as in marriage, the man dishonors the woman he claims to love by taking away her virginity, thereby exposing the falsity of such a sense by showing it is not love, but lust, for example, hate. This is the lamb, slain from the foundation of material sense of sexuality. Unquote. The root evil is respect for ecclesiastical authority, for tradition. The crowd is ignorant. They follow the herd instinct. They won't think for themselves, but think what the, quote, authorities, unquote, tell them to think. Until instructed in science, we are all victims of the crowd mentality. During the terrible ordeal of the Next Friends suit, which involved her son's complicity, Mrs. Eddy said, "I am now being punished for the fruits of my first marriage." A Christian Science statute states, "These words of St. Matthew have special application to Christian Scientists, namely, it is not good to marry." Unquote. But if one assumes a marriage contract, one is held in faithful allegiance to it. Jesus assumed no such human obligations as marriage and church, but Mrs. Eddy contracted both, so she was forced to find the scientific solution for them. This, of necessity, made her the bride. The real man-woman oneness. I think we all understand what has just been said was in no way meant to disparage the wonderful relationship that can exist between a man and a woman. It can be the nearest thing to heaven known on earth. We must remember that in principle, the great forever, man and woman are one. They were one in the beginning. The delusion that manhood is separated from womanhood originated with the Adam dream. Regarding this, Mrs. Eddy fully assented to the proposition that, quote, the tendency of the desire for the sweet companionship of the opposite sex is divinely natural. Remember, primarily, the individual was equal and wholly satisfied. He was God's image and reflection, reflection of father-mother. Learn not to condemn this longing, for it is about the only thing in a human being that, seen for what it is, indicates his divine entity. In the beginning, man and woman were one, and mortal mind made the separation, therefore the constant longing for completion. We show our love for God by loving his reflection. Divine love will eventually cause each one of us to turn and find him in our own mind, that is love, what we have vainly looked for in each other. Because of the persecution her teaching had met, she counseled wisdom and patience. Quote, the wise man saith, when I was a child, I thought as a child, etc. The wisdom of this and of every period is temperance, to wait on the divine energy's development of moral strength and human possibilities. To push a fact to its ultimate sometimes so injures the predicate as to lose instead of to gain time in the unfolding of God's plan. The absolute in divine science is an infinite fact approachable in time by degrees. Its ultimate is eternity. Its footsteps are time. Marriage and offspring are mortal conditions which take their origin in the human and not in the divine mind. It is a great and solemn question how far to press the divine facts of being and their manifestation into present human experience and practice. Unquote. A dear couple of my acquaintance recently celebrated their 70th wedding anniversary. The wife, due to a belief of aging, is no longer able to speak, but her husband says they no longer need words to convey their constancy and their undying love for each other. In the bond that cements them, their hearts beat as one. What is the solution that Christian Science presents for the redemption of the human race? It is the system she named Christian Science, and which she wove into the text of Science and Health. Quote, be wholly absorbed in the work of daily gaining more understanding of God, Mrs. Eddy admonished her students. Then personal ambition, envy, desire to be in this or that place cannot use you. Personal ambition has no place in a Christian's thought or life. He is wholly occupied in the loving, humble purpose to do good, to be good, and to prove that good is all that can govern thought, action, condition, or being. Unquote. Why is the system the solution? Because it gets personality out of the way. It gets a personal sense of self out of the way, so that we become the scientific system. We become impersonal science. And our thought moves only in the three great categories of being. In a way, it could be likened to studying mathematics. There we also get self out of the way and work only out from principle. We do not inject our personality into the principle of mathematics. In the science of being, working out from principle is the only thing that matters. But remember, the principle is love, which expresses itself in loving relationships with one's fellow man. If this does not result, we are somehow missing the main point of the whole study of the textbook. Review of the three great categories. In No and Yes, Mrs. Eddy states, "My system of metaphysics rests on God as one and all, and denies the actual existence of matter and evil." She also says, "The song of Christian Science is work, work, work. Watch and pray." Regarding work, religion doesn't require work. It leans on sentiment, emotion, ritual observances. But a science, with its system, is different. It concerns itself with education, study, and learning. Remember, Mrs. Eddy has about 120 references to this fact, that Christian Science is something that must be learned. Because of the purity of her thought, she was used by God, Infinite Good, as its recording angel. She wrote down what God, her true and real divine mind, dictated concerning these three all-revealing categories, through which the infinite unknown, namely divine love, God, as a whole, could be reduced to simplicity. Even a child can now learn these categories and so become one with God, Infinite Good. The system of fundamental categories gives us the tools we need for all work in Christian Science. The first great category consists of the sevenfold nature of God, which the first edition unequivocally states we are, though it remained for later editions to state this category in its present exact form as mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love. The second category is the divine infinite calculus, in which the sevenfold nature of God operates as the four orders of Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. The third category consists of the planes, levels, or dimensions of science, namely, 1. Science itself, 2. Divine Science, 3. Absolute Christian Science, and 4. Christian Science. How do we start? We start with the first great category, the seven synonymous terms for God. In the final edition, Mrs. Eddy has approximately 800 references to mind, 600 to spirit, 161 to soul, 300 to principle, 370 to life, and over 700 to truth, and 366 to love. Careful study of the seven deific synonyms reveals their distinct character through the ideas associated with them. We ponder each of these references not so much to find out and become familiar with our true identity, but rather to understand God, the principle of being. Of course, as we study, we become familiar with our true identity. Then, as that understanding becomes concrete, tangible, real to us, it becomes subjective, and we don't hesitate to acknowledge, "I am mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love." As Mrs. Eddy told the New York Church, we must, quote, rise above the oft-repeated inquiry, "What am I?" to the scientific response, "I am able to impart truth, health, and happiness." The second category is learning how these seven elements which can constitute our divinity, our true identity, operate in a fourfold calculus of Word, seeking, Christ, finding, Christianity, using, and Science, being. The Word reveals our God-being to us. The Christ translates it. Christianity demonstrates it. And Science interprets it. Here again, the right motive for study is the love of truth, of God, Infinite Good, the love of reality. To arrive at the atmosphere of God, which permeates the first edition, our motive must be completely unselfed. The whole purpose of the system is this intermediary purpose to give birth to the understanding of God. This birth out of matter into spirit is a daily and hourly growth. It is forever getting nearer love that is love, universal divine presence and power. If the system doesn't move us ever closer to the love principle that expresses itself in love for one's fellow man, we are on a divergent path. In working with the system, Mrs. Eddy denominated Christian Science, we must watch that personal sense does not pervert it or subvert it into a false intellectual exercise. Quote, conscious worth satisfies the hungry heart and nothing else can, unquote. But if personal sense is trying to arrive at conscious worth, it will never arrive. We must not let the system become restrictive rather than expansive, and so lead us off the real path of love for God and man. Apropos of that, Mrs. Eddy admonished, the letter alone, without due proportion of the spirit of Christian Science, almost inhumanizes a mortal. It chastises his material mode of love, of feeling, or of being either kind or true. And if he has not gained the spiritual sense of those, there is nothing left to him but the knowledge of a false sense of goodness, which he must either loathe and lose the false sense of goodness, or else, having it, be consciously false to himself, and of necessity, false to others, unquote. A great sacrifice of materiality has to precede this advanced spiritual understanding. We have to give all our love to principle without first asking, what am I going to get in return for it? The third great category consists of the four levels on which these seven synonyms, which constitute our true being, operate, namely the level of science itself, divine science, absolute Christian Science, and Christian Science. A student who understands the levels on which Mrs. Eddy wrote finds no contradictory statements in her writings because he becomes aware that, quote, the divine science of man is woven into one web of consistency without seam or rent, unquote, because from the infinite one in Christian Science comes one principle, the only I or ego, and its infinite idea. And with this infinitude come spiritual rules, laws, and their demonstration. Man has perpetual individuality, and God's laws and their intelligent and harmonious action constitute his individuality in the science of soul. Unquote. The outcome of a spiritual understanding of the scientific system in our textbook is the establishment of the supremacy of spirit, which obliterates the human sense of the divine, takes away all sense of matter, and reveals the final fact that the idea, Christ, is not a materialized or finite man or woman, but is the infinite concept of infinite mind. Unquote. Chapter 2, Imposition and Demonstration. Part 1, Imposition. Imposition and Demonstration is a deeply spiritual chapter. Has anyone noticed how many times this chapter uses the term science, which Mrs. Eddy says is the mind of God? In the first edition, where we encounter the highest statements Mrs. Eddy ever made directly, her whole emphasis is on science. For example, on the science itself level, where the infinite one, the one principle, includes its idea. In the final, the 1910 edition, which is the broadest, designed to meet the need of humanity, Mrs. Eddy reduced this science to the Christian Science level, which shows how ideas dissolve illusions and error is overcome by an understanding of truth. With this in mind, I made a rough count of her use of science and scientific in the entire first edition. As I recall, it was nearly 800 times, and in this chapter, Imposition and Demonstration, she uses these terms about 186 times. The great overtone of the first part, imposition, is that there is but one spirit. There are not many spirits, persons. Nothing is real but God and God's expression. She is here contrasting the onlyness of spirit with the dualism of imposition, her name for spiritualism, or minds many in this chapter. The first part of this chapter concerns the imposition of illusions, alias mortal mind. How mortal mind tries to make us believe we are mortals, subject to sin, sickness, and death. But we cannot be made to believe a lie. This chapter instructs us how to come out of illusions, human opinions, minds many or spirits, how to rid ourselves of the lie that we are mortal, the lie Jesus called a murderer from the beginning. The chapter teaches we must look to science for an understanding of our true God being. We get the truth about the real world only as we go out from the standpoint of spirit instead of the standpoint of mortals, spirits. The basis of all scientific deduction is that there can be but one full and complete reflection of one God. We do not have the right basic sense of Christian science until we grasp this fundamental fact. There is not another starting point. The sense of a material universe, the product of false beliefs, false education, ancient mythology, has befogged humanity since the dawn of human consciousness. The sense of a material universe, with its sin, sickness, and death, is like a mask, hiding the ever-present spiritual real universe. Mrs. Eddy calls this mask animal magnetism, and shows it to be only a mistaken concept, a facade, without substance. Behind this mask is the face of God, or good only. Does the mind always control the body, and how? You affirm the truth over and over that you are mind. And what Mrs. Eddy's writings tell us, mind includes, that you are spirit, and what it includes, that you are soul, principle, life, truth, and love are, and what they include. This affirming and reaffirming acts just as the sun and rain do on the seed buried in the ground. The sun and rain call it forth. Your affirmations call forth what is already latent in consciousness. You readily admit that thought controls the body. The arm can't move of itself. You have to think about something you want the arm to reach for, or the arm doesn't move. A leg doesn't walk by itself. You have to think about making a move. It moves only in obedience to your thought. In the same way, your affirmations of truth bring you into oneness with truth. Just as affirming weariness makes that weariness. We heal ourselves of the plagues of mortal mind through the conviction of their unreality. And this conviction comes through the constant affirming of the truth which we know we are in reality. The standpoint of the first edition is that, in reality, we are spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. Therefore, our starting point must be to recognize God as the only source of understanding. Since science, true knowing, is the mind of God, we must learn this science, must assimilate the truth of being set forth in Mary Baker Eddy's writings. Remember, she has about 120 references in Science and Health indicating this science must be learned in order to tap the source of all comprehension. The belief that the human intellect or a personal I can give us true understanding must be relinquished. The imposition part of this chapter corrects our terrible misconceptions and explains that we touch reality only as we go out from the one mind, God. Our true being is understanding, the spiritual understanding which is love. Understanding is love with us, the kingdom of heaven within consciousness. The chapter shows that love and spiritual understanding are one. We must be brought into a state of love for all mankind, for only in that state can healing be accomplished. In The Science of Man, Mrs. Eddy stated categorically that understanding is God. In the final edition of Science and Health, understanding is still God, but veiled. There on page 115 we first get a true picture of our being as God. Divine principle, life, truth, love, soul, spirit, mind. Man, the divine image, is there set forth as God's spiritual idea. An idea is defined as an image in mind. This would be the first edition standpoint, where it is openly stated that we are spirit, soul, principle, love, life, and truth. Then she shows how an ignorant, false, unreal sense of things is changed by the pouring in of the teachings of science. First, evil beliefs, passions, and appetites, depraved will, etc., are gradually supplanted by the traditional qualities of humanity, honesty, affection, compassion, etc., which she names moral. As this translating goes on, we arrive at reality, the third degree, understanding, which is the same standpoint that she began with in the scientific translation of immortal mind. In the third degree, mortal mind, ignorance, false beliefs, illusions have disappeared, and reality is understood. So through laying off ignorance and unreality, we have come full circle to the standpoint of the divine synonyms. Persistence and perseverance required. The chick inside the egg has to peck at its shell 10,000 times before the shell is broken. Then the little chick can look down with wonderment at the broken shell and say, "Did I come out of that?" Likewise, quote, "Mortals must peck open their shells with Christian Science to escape the covering, the veil of illusion animal magnetism has wrapped them in, and look outward and upward," unquote. When the infinite God consciousness replaces the restricted mental state mortals presently seem to be in, then they too, with a stare of incredulity, can look down on their broken shell. But we are not mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love until we are able to demonstrate this fact. There is a cross to be taken up, namely, the laying down of the mortal viewpoint. Experiencing the kingdom of heaven isn't a gift from the tooth fairy. This again gives us an idea why Mrs. Eddy gradually hid the great scientific truths she so openly stated in Science of Man, where she bluntly declared, quote, "You, my students, are God," unquote, which she reiterates in the first edition in many ways. She tells us our true being is spirit, understanding, which she calls God. But mortals persist in the belief that spirit needs matter in order to express itself, that intelligence, which is God, expresses itself through the human mind, and that thinking is connected with the brain. Mortals believe life is in the body, and that the personal or animal is dead when signs of life leave the body. This belief that intelligence and life are channeled through the body is what Mrs. Eddy here calls imposition, and which she later calls spiritualism. She indicates we are spiritualists to the extent we believe this baseless fabrication. Understanding is the divinely endowed scientific consciousness already within us, within mind or God, which Mrs. Eddy instructs us is at once the center and circumference of being. Then she says that the clearer, higher views science gives inspire the godlike man to reach the absolute center and circumference of his being, unquote. We must not forget that the one infinite mind, that is spirit, can have but one infinite manifestation, or man, and that this infinite mind expresses itself in a system of divine ideas, the system she denominated Christian Science, and which she tells us must be learned. There are not minds many or spirits many. That is the big point of this chapter. There is one infinite good which expresses itself in one system of divine ideas. What, then, is the so-called mind of mortal man? Mrs. Eddy answers this question right at the beginning of the imposition part of this chapter. She says, "What we term the mind of man is belief, forming the visionary basis of matter. Therefore, matter embraces not the reality of man. Belief is not a manifestation of intelligence, but of non-intelligence. To distinguish between the mind of soul and the so-called mind of body, we must remember one is idea and the other belief, alias the counterfeit and claimant of mind, even as error claims truth." In that reference, she says matter embraces not the reality of man, and in an early sermon she admonishes her listeners, quote, "The truth of the body is as essential to man's harmony as the truth of the soul, but the letter regarding both is not sufficient for either. The letter of truth is useful only that thereby the student may gain the spirit thereof. The letter alone killeth, but the spirit maketh alive. We work cheerfully for what we love. Eagerly we pursue the object of affection, and how certainly we accomplish that whereunto we devote our lives and give our energies." The apathy, lack of love and Christian vigor, comes of seeking only the letter of truth, and stopping there because it costs so much more to gain the spirit thereof. The price of truth is hourly devotion, cheerful sacrifice, toil, and irrepressible conflict. The science of Christian healing, or the basis and tendency thereof, can be taught, but the principle of this science can never be fully understood unless we strive for the spirit of truth and love. Relying on the help of God is looking to a person instead of a principle for our demonstration. Divine science requires more of us. Do your own work is the demand of truth. You must understand the principle of spirit so far as to realize the nothingness of matter and the supremacy of spirit." Unquote. In her chapter, Natural Science, we learn that all personal human opinions, conceptions, theories, are built on the mingling of opposites rather than on the one spirit. But when we turn to science for answers, we are turning to our real and divine mind, which alone can unlock the reality of being for us, and we then launch out from a boundless basis, discarding the lie that life can be in the body, the lie which results in the human belief of gods and lords many. Generic man is another name for the coincidence of the divine principle and the divine idea. They are one. Looking from God's point of view, from the God consciousness, she declares in the first edition, "When we are spirit, we shall have gained the high import of this scripture. I and my Father, divine principle, are one, and shall find too this oneness occasions no loss of identity, but that I signifies spirit and not matter, principle and not person, soul and not body, even the intelligence represented by all ideas, symbolizing harmony from the blade of grass to a star." Next, she says, "The question at present is whether this I is principle or person, soul or body, yea, God or man. Where do we place the I? Is it spirit in matter, soul in body, life in flower, or the outside intelligence and life that form these?" Unquote. Mrs. Eddy defines I in part as divine principle, spirit, and says there is but one I, or us. When we are spirit, we shall find that I signifies spirit and not matter. And as she explained at the outset of today's session, this should awaken us to the deep meaning of Genesis 1, let us make man in our image. It is clear, since we are spirit and we are soul, that we are therefore the us that can say, let us make man in our image. What a profound teaching this is. Boundless love expresses itself as man. Of course, we realize and demonstrate this divinity only when the structure of our consciousness becomes one with the structure of reality. Note how she explains, quote, all formations are shadows of being, and we their soul and substance. Personality will be swallowed up in the boundless love that shadows forth man. This is not losing man, but finding yourself more blessed as principle than person, as God than man, as soul than sense. All depends on mind. Matter holds no power over man to create or to destroy him. Here we are assured, personality will be swallowed up in the boundless love that shadows forth man. It is mind, spirit, soul as one principle that shadows forth man. She has consistently driven it home that we must recognize ourselves as principle and not personality. She is trying to make us realize what a blessing this realization will be when it is comprehendingly demonstrated. It is interesting that she says, all depends upon mind, and mind is not capitalized here, so it means the mind we now have. But when students confused the one and only mind, the mind of Christ, with the illusionary carnal mind, Mrs. Eddy found she had to capitalize mind to distinguish it from a false sense of mind.